Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first quarter 2024 wrap-up equity overview with Tim Caban. And Tim, I just came from Pennsylvania, where we had a great circle meeting, and I was reminded again how much benefit there is in this environment of teaming up, or I should say circling up. So tell us a little bit about it.
Absolutely, Catherine. It was a pleasure to see you in Pennsylvania, and it was very kind of you to visit my home where we had the local circle gathered, and we had a fire going. So I said, we have the fireside chat with Catherine, and you got to meet our dog Autumn, who did you the service of drinking out of your water cup, which is a term of affection. But it really energized all the local people here, which was very nice. Thank you.
Well, one of the things I keep hearing on all of these meet and greets is the benefits of circling up. You know, it's a high friction environment. There's a benefit. Then we left and went over to the Radnor Hunt Club, where we had an even bigger, as a big gathering. It was beautiful because the sun came out, and and Nina Hine arrived from LA. So we did our Food for the Soul Philadelphia tour. We went to Brandywine Museum, then the Barnes Foundation and Philadelphia Museum. And later we'll publish Ricardo and Nina, and as well as Uli and Nina and I having conversations about those. Okay, so the first quarter wrap up. This I just want to do a quick jump on screen share and show you. We now have easy access. If you go into the website and log in, you can pull up the cover pages for all the wrap ups and click to the wrap up web presentations in PDF. And it makes it much easier to access all the wrap-ups. But the theme for the first quarter, and I don't know if you've seen the cover page yet, Tim, I love it. So the title is U.S. States, the Opportunity to Lead Financial Freedom. So okay. We've been on the Financial Transaction Freedom Tour, and Robert did a fabulous sort of little graphic of the American Eagle landing on the barcode as the pen that of the kind of pens that were used to sign the Constitution.
That's a really cool image. Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
He created that image?
Yeah. Robert just created it. So, wow. So it's sort of the American Eagle and the founding fathers messing up the barcode.
I like it.
It's really cool. Anyway, when you go to the wrap up section, just click on the first quarter. Today, though, we're talking about, here's a bigger picture. We're talking about the financial markets. And what we want to do is first go through the different sort of a market view of how the different markets have and are performing, starting with the equity markets. But then, so we'll go through fixed income commodities. But then we want to talk about what are the risk issues and opportunities and bring it down to sort of what you and I do in the next quarter. So with that, any other comments before we dive in, Tim?
No, let's get to it.
Okay, so I had to show you this. Visual Capitalist just put out, if you go to the first quarter wrap-up web presentation, you can see the quarterly charts for the equities markets. They're all wrapped up here. But I think Visual Capitalist said it best, and I want to show you the chart they did. Have you seen this? In 2014, I got in a huge war with a variety, all the gold guys and Greg Hunter and everybody else. And I said, you know, they're not going to mark down the debt. They're going to mark up the equity. So here's a chart from Visual Capitalist. I don't know if you've seen it, but basically it's a little big here. You know, the market takes off in the mid-90s. And here's the S&P. So $100 at the beginning of this period in 1970 would be $22,000 today. If you put it in equities, $7,000 plus if you put it in corporate bonds, $5,000 plus if you put it in gold, $2,000 plus if you put it in treasury bonds, and less, they say, in real estate. I disagree with that. It depends on where you are. Yeah. It's very local.
And looking at that chart, I like the... But first of all, the scale of it, so you realize how much stocks outperform. But even the portion from 2000 to 2010 with those two peaks, which was the 2000 tech bubble burst and the 2008 real estate bubble burst, it's a very zigzaggy or volatile line, but it's still the all of the ups and downs are still above the orange line. And so that's one thing I talk with people a lot about is what is the risk? If the risk is the zigzagginess, but the whole line is above the line that's not as zigzaggy, you have two different, you have the risk of the zigzag, but you also have the risk of the flat line underperforming. So you have to choose your risk.
So here's the thing. This up in the equity markets has been engineered with a tsunami of monetary and fiscal policies designed to engineer this. And that's not related to the fact that treasury bonds are in the, you know, are in the doghouse compared, because that's, we'll talk about that when we get to fixed income, but a lot of the money that's been used to engineer this has been coming from the treasury market, not, and sovereign bond market. So it's not just US.
Yes.
Anyway, but I thought I'd do another look at the S&P. So this shows you all the way from, you know, the 20s on. Mm-hmm. And what you can see is we are now, we backed off a tiny bit, but we're at an all-time high.
We are. And even just, this is in the last 6 months that there was what Rambus calls a, you know, a bear trap, which he accurately describes, at least at this point. And then basically the S&P has gone almost, it's gone very vertical for the last 6 months.
Right. And he's asking if this is the, you know, the hyperbolic, what do you call it when it melt up?
Yeah, he's called it the melt up, akin to 1998-2000, that final absolute vertical move. And then what happens after that?
Right. So I wanted to point out a couple of issues in the stock market. And you sent a great chart because, you know, I'm very interested in value stocks. And of course, value stocks have been completely in the doghouse. And we've seen the market really carried by seven, what's called the seven, it's really the AI stocks. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's seven momentum stocks. And let me see, you sent a great chart. Let me see if I can pull that up. Okay. So why don't you go ahead and explain what's been going on?
Well, I looked at this chart because you sent some articles. I see a lot of articles about how the Magnificent Seven is losing steam. And for those people maybe who aren't familiar, the Magnificent Seven drives a big section, a big chunk of the S&P 500, which is the graph that we were just looking at. And that's because it's what's called cap weighted. So that means that the biggest stocks can have an outsized value in the overall index. But I looked at this chart because I wanted to just check, there's the old trust but verify, and say, well, let's see, are these stocks really, you know, losing steam? And this chart is a year, well, 1 year time period.
Yeah, so it starts last April, right?
Yeah. So I see the bottom purple line is Tesla, which is down by 6.25, but the other ones, Google is the lowest, the yellow one at 45, and the highest is Nvidia at 215. These are percentage.
Right. And Nvidia has come off a lot. It was at 250.
Yes. Right. But the other ones, I don't know how much, you know, they look like they're kind of, you know, I guess it's all relative. How much how much is something coming off and how much is it up, and what's your perspective on things?
So here's what's interesting. One of my favorite investors to track with is Jeffrey Gundlach of DoubleLine.
Yes.
And I have great respect for his ability and talent. And he just came out and said the AI boom in stocks is equivalent to the dot-com bubble and worms of economic pain. Now, you know, it's interesting. The implication on all of these is AI is so phenomenally contributory to productivity that is fueling this huge up. That's not what I see. What I see is a tsunami of central bank and government money pouring into contracts and purchases designed to build the control model using software and using the tech firms. Mm-hmm. So I don't see AI adding to productivity at all. One of our stories in Money and Markets is about how the Amazon Fresh had to have thousands of people in India watching on camera to make the, you know, the checkout with no humans work.
Yeah, they build it, I think, as something called the walkout, where you could just walk out with stuff and said, oh, it's AI and it's all this fancy computer stuff, and realized it was like a mouse in the box behind the scenes of all these people watching to make sure that the computers did the right thing.
Right. So, you know, so to me, and we also saw an article this week on the extraordinary environmental damage coming from the demands of, you know, the hardware that AI needs to back it up. So, this seven stock momentum and the danger of another AI sort of dot-com bubble is one issue. Another issue, I can't tell you how much time we spent on the great taking in the first quarter of 2023. And I'm sure, I don't know what you did, but in the annual wrap-up, just to give people to put takings into perspective, we did a list of all the takings essentially from World War II on. And, you know, it's extraordinary, the number of them. And our question was, you know, why are you worried about the takings that might happen in the future? Look at all the takings that have happened in the past and are ongoing. You know, let's put them in perspective. Anyway, we did a huge interview, finally, with Carolyn and I talking about the David Webb's book, The Great Taking, and putting it in perspective of what risk issues somebody should be concerned about. But I would say that what you feel from people is they are increasingly concerned about the increased lawlessness. And and the big issue is, where do I go?
Yes, and I think it that great taking fear from the book highlights where the rubber really hits people. If all your money out of your accounts was gone. And to me, part of what I think about is the story believable? Like, is it, because ultimately this has to get people on board to go along with whatever happens. And the great taking, where they come and they evaporate all your accounts, to me, most people would recognize that as a theft. But if you crash the market, or you have a bank meltdown that leads to a market crash, or something else that people are used to, and it takes the value of their accounts down dramatically, right, they're willing to go along with that story because it's something they've become accustomed to seeing.
Right. So a lot of our time a lot of my time, you know, I was in the United States for most of the first quarter. I came on January 20th. And a lot of my time has been spent working with state legislators on taking all those different steps they can take to protect the residents of their state from financial lawlessness and financial control. So we've got a ton of information up on the website. I won't cover it today, but it's certainly the theme of this wrap-up is going to be on what the states can do. And I have to say, driving around, when you're in the jurisdictions where the states are taking action, it makes a huge difference to when you're in the states that aren't. And yet I keep getting the question, Tim, on how do I get away from this? What can I do to protect myself? And I keep saying to people, look, if there's no law, there's no.
And then don't discount. Many times people say, I'm getting away, and they totally discount their social network. And if your social network is real strong, and maybe sometimes it's better to stay where you are and fight or work to make it
better. Absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing that came up in the first quarter was I ran into more and more companies that are adopting financial fraud as their business model.
Can you say an example of that?
Yeah. So we just posted a video and talked about it last week on Money and Markets from Dollar General. They're putting one price on the shelf, but when you check out, it's a different price, and they keep doing it, and it's systematic, it's documented. Now you've got the AGs involved. But I ran into it with car rental companies, with hotel, corporate chain hotels. Basically, you get online, you make a reservation, you agree to a price. You show up, suddenly there's padding. On the car rental company, it more than doubled the price. Mm-hmm. That's real padding. And the people who are at the desk can't explain to you what the charges are, can do nothing about them, and you have to call a third party. And then when you check out, you bring the car back, same thing. New charges you never heard of, you got to call a third party. you know, on and on and on. And before you know it, you've paid three times what you've agreed. And I believe, just from watching how the software works, that they literally have the software and AI working out how much they can skim you before you'll contact your state AG or do something about it.
And they skim you at a time when you have less options. So you get to the airport at 11 at night, you need right. to get in the car to get to the hotel, and then you're presented with all that padding, and you right. can argue about it, but probably at 11 at night, the person really doesn't know what's going on.
Oh, the people at the desk have no idea. They really don't yeah. know. They have no...
I can't tell you. I don't know. Then, like, okay, I'll call the number, but I'm going to do it later. And it just is designed to kind of slow walk it and get you to give up almost. You have to have a lot of energy to fight.
One of our subscribers is taking a business school class and explained that this is the model that's presented.
Wow.
This is being trained.
And when they present that model in business school, do they say it's something you should do, or they're just making you aware of it?
Right. But you can tell there's permission top down to do this.
Yeah.
So that's, to me, that's part of the great taking or sort of the taking philosophy. This week on the Salieri Report, our theme is scapegoat capitalism. And there's a guy who's got a new theory. He says, you know, basically they want to take. And what they do is they invent these emergencies or other excuses for doing what they intend to do, but it's all just air cover for taking.
Yeah.
Okay, the last thing I wanted to talk about is war, because we have a lot more feedback from subscribers in Europe, in Poland, in Germany, in the Netherlands, in just around Europe about the push to put NATO soldiers into the Ukraine. So I've been looking to see what impact is the war going to make to our lives or increase chances of war. And it's very hard sometimes, Tim, to tell whether this is just theater or they really are crazy enough to try and engineer a NATO land war in the Ukraine. Anyway, so I took a look. I thought we'd just take a look at what ITA is, the Aerospace and Defense ETF.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly underperforming the S&P. So, you know, whatever war is going on, they're depending far more on surveillance and the control grid than they are on, you know, land war kind of behavior. And what's important to understand is we just saw that.
Which line is which there on this graph?
Okay, so the top line is the S&P.
The mountain graph, the blue mountain graph.
No, the blue mountain graph is ITA, which is the aerospace and defense ETF. And then the bottom line down 27% is Boeing. So as you can see, you know, the money's going towards the AI stocks. It's, you know, it's not going to defense in any kind of meaningful way. And what's more interesting to me is, so we've been tracking Boeing fairly steadily. And now we've seen the U.S. Secretary of State on his way to Brussels for a NATO meeting. He had to drive 4 hours in a car because his Boeing plane wouldn't work. And that's the second time it's happened to him this year. And I find it's very hard to have a serious land war if your machinery doesn't work.
Yeah. And I think I saw with you on with John Titus mentioned that the Kayak allows you to filter out certain Boeing aircraft, the travel site.
Right.
Which is extraordinary to me that it allows you to factor out a whole type of aircraft.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, have you seen the latest videos of the engine covering coming off of a Boeing airport on takeoff from Houston? It's pretty remarkable. And unfortunately, I'm booked to fly Boeing back to Amsterdam, so wish me luck.
Good luck.
Okay, so let's turn to fixed income, because fixed income, just when we thought the bond market was completely at an end, it starts to look attractive, and we see money pouring into corporate bonds. So again, back on the website, we have U.S. dollar index up and continues to be up. It's about 104 now. I don't know how they do it. Junk bonds keep out-trading everybody, and you know, for 20 years, I keep saying, I don't have the nerve to buy them.
Yeah, I'd rather take risk in the stock market where it pays better.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, the treasury market not doing that well. But there's no doubt, you know, that fixed income is more attractive. And I think the big question we'll get to, well, let's take it now. If you're, Tim, if you're looking to do fixed income, you have to be very careful about credit. Because the tsunami of money pouring into the stock market has been financed with the bond market. And the reality is we have far more paper than we have assets. And that's part of what's fueling the fear of the great taking. So how do you approach the fixed income market and get really attractive yields that you can lock up now, but grapple with the credit issues?
Well, it's a couple of things. So, I mean, the short-term rates are higher. They've been higher than the longer-term rates for quite some time now. And so I would say you want to focus on shorter duration or shorter maturity things. But then within that, so if you don't want to have treasuries because of the credit, you don't want to loan money to the government, then other options are things like municipals. But when you get into municipals, and I've heard you mention that the size of the municipal market is not anywhere big as the treasury market. And I looked at that in Pennsylvania, and then you bring up things, it's healthcare systems, it's Philadelphia school district, it's things that, and then many people in Solari type of mindset say, well, I don't want healthcare because they had the COVID vaccine. And you start eliminating, or I have to loan my money to the Philadelphia school system? That's horrendous. So it really becomes challenging. It's not an easy solution. You can do bank CDs at a bank that you might like, even your local bank. But then when you get above the FDIC limit, and you could argue about whether you think that's even really a worthwhile insurance or not. But putting that aside, you then start playing this game to do I want to maximize FDIC limit with the titling, with the husband and wife, the wife and the joint and all these kind of things. But it just starts to tell you about a lot of the it's not easy to do.
Well, you can do brokered CDs in your securities account.
You can, but then in brokered CDs, who are the issuers? JP Morgan Chase, HSBC.
No, I've been hunting and pecking for someone.
Okay.
Helping them find CDs, and you can find some decent not a lot. You know, and yes. I keep having to have them send me a new list every morning because, you know, well, we picked them all out, but then they forgot to put the max. They only put a fifth of what they could put in each one. And so now we're struggling. Yeah. But
you can get more size in that. And then it is FDIC insured.
Now, the other thing, a lot of the banks now have a program where if you go over the 250, they'll automatically put it out overnight with somebody where you're under the 250.
Yeah, any of the big brokerage firms offer that product where you can have, it's a lot higher limit. They'll say up to $2.5 million or up to $5 million. You can just put the money in and we'll automatically rotate it around the bank so that everything is FDIC insured.
Right. Now, I don't like that because it puts me in banks where I don't want to be. Because even when I do a brokerage
CD, it's like, oh, you're in the Bank of China. Well, like, why am I in the Bank of China? And you know, you have to have a discussion.
Right. So, I like picking out the, anyway, so when I was an investment advisor, the way I would deal with it is I would do corporate municipal bonds and I would be unbelievably picky. And I was working with a guy who used to be in the treasurer, the state treasurer's office, who was really good and knew his stuff. And he had a great relationship with the firm desk. And we would just go through and hunt and peck and hunt and peck and hunt and peck. And I remember telling him, no, I won't do Iceland before the crash. No, I won't do Chicago. No, Illinois. No. You know, so... Yeah. So, but we would just hunt and peck and hunt and peck, and we built some incredible portfolios, including portfolios where essentially you're building your own annuity and you've got control and you can sell if you want to. So,
and if you don't let the tax tail govern everything, like if you're not in Texas, but you buy Texas permanent school fund or something like that, then you're just, okay, I don't have, in Texas, it wouldn't matter anyway, because there's no state tax, but stop get out of the, I have to have the best tax result as the primary driver, and then you can open up some other opportunities.
Right. I always find, you want to know what the tax issues are, but you don't want to let them control you. Yeah. Anyway, so there's building a bond portfolio, or there's doing bank CDs, and I have to say it's attractive. I do want to spend a minute and talk about the treasury market. because there is something that we're dealing with in the Treasury market that for most people it's too overwhelming to face. And the time is coming with the explosion of debt at the federal level. We're going to have to face it. It's coming up. It's going to come up. And I want to start by telling you, let me pull this up. I was watching a very serious presentation on the great taking analysis of, can they take your securities at a very high level? Can they seize mm-hmm. them? And then they came around and it was a very serious, in-depth presentation, went on for about 25 minutes. They said, the solution is to sell all your stocks and take your money and put it in Treasury Direct.
Yeah.
And I was so shocked. I was in an audience of like 50 people. I screamed, no! I said, you don't want them to take it, so instead you're going to give it to them? Are you out of your mind? And the whole room looked at me, and it was really funny because after it was over, a lot of people came over and said, okay, what do I do with my money?
Well, I think a lot of times in conversations of this type, people will use the word they without specifying or thinking about who they is.
Right.
They will take my money. Well, who's they?
Right.
And, you know?
Okay, so let me just show you. I did a slide presentation the other day for a group of people on the missing money. Mm-hmm. And so here's the slide. Because I just, you know, who was it who said our task is to look at the world and see it whole? Okay, so this is a money in and money out chart on the U.S. Treasury market. So, or the U.S. Treasury. So mm-hmm. we sell debt, you know, the U.S. Treasury sells debt and Treasury bonds and bills, mostly to our pension funds
mm-hmm.
and retirement accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And the money goes in the Treasury. And then they provide credit in a variety of ways, and more money goes into the Treasury. Those are mortgage insurance and other things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then they sell Treasuries directly. So the mm-hmm. the Treasury bonds and bills go through your brokerage account or your IRA or your pension fund.
Mm-hmm.
Treasury Direct, you go to Treasury Direct and you buy the Treasuries. And then, of course, we all put our taxes in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that money all goes into the Treasury. Now, FASB 56 adopted under Trump in 2018 meant all of that can be made secret. Whatever portion of that they want to be secret is secret. And the federal government has been required by law to produce audited financial statements since 1996. And it never has.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is an entity that refuses to produce any kind of financial transparency. And finally, because they weren't going to do it after, you know, almost 25 years, announced they were taking the books secret and dark.
Yeah.
Okay. So all,
and it was during the Kavanaugh hearings, I think.
It was during the Kavanaugh hearings. Okay. So all the money goes in. So your pension funds are buying treasuries and putting the money in, et cetera, et cetera. And okay, now where does the money go? The first place it goes is undocumentable adjustments. We've issued, as of 2015, we had issued $21 trillion of treasury bonds, and there was $21 trillion of undocumentable adjustments, money disappearing,
mm-hmm.
you know, anyway.
Yeah.
Then money goes into the black budget, which is secret classified things. We also have secret books now with FASB 56, and there's the money that gets reported in the public books. Okay, so for all we know, essentially all the money you put in that doesn't go to pay for daily operations disappears.
Mm-hmm.
So you put the money in. Now, if all the money disappears out the back door other than what is spent for operations, what is a treasury bond? A treasury bond is an IOU from yourself as a citizen. So the citizens are obligated to make good on the treasury bonds. That's the credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our taxes and our assets.
Mm-hmm.
So if the money goes in and instead of it financing assets that stay in the government, it disappears out of the back door. The only thing we are buying is an IOU from ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so why would you want more of that?
I think then the question, which is always brought up, is what do I do about this? And we just talked about that with the different options in the fixed income market. Or, by the way, this illustration of the pension fund having a deep state drain, that's when I first got to know to pay attention to you, because I was serving on the pension board of trustees of the local firefighter, police, and non-union employees in my township. And I looked at that. I was like, uh-oh, I better find out about that if I'm going to be at the board.
Well, it was really funny because when I called our graphic artist who was doing it at the time, I said, I'm doing the newest wrap-up. It's an overview of the global pension funds. You know, where do we stand? Mm-hmm. And it was a very in-depth study. And as soon as we launched it, our site was hacked and went down for a month. We had to bring up a whole new site. Yeah. We also did one on neutrinos. And to this day, I wonder which it was. But so the first thing he said, I can't tell you how boring that is. That's like the most boring topic. And so I said, well, it's not boring because if you look at it systematically, we're putting the money in. I said, it's like a cow and you're milking the cow, but the milk is going out of the bucket and people keep telling you there's not enough milk in the bucket. You need to put more in. And my attitude is if there's a hole in the bottom of the bucket, you know, why do you need to put more in? Mm-hmm. And so we went back and forth and back and forth. And then we came up with this image of, you know, so if you look at the cow's markings, they're the map of the world. Okay. And the money's sort of disappearing down into all these things.
Yeah.
And your pension fund is getting milked. Mm-hmm. And of course the treasury market is the big, you know, so this is our deep state politics Solari report. But it's one of the reasons I think the desire to have complete financial transaction control is the desire to do taxation without representation.
Can you explain what that means? I thought you gave a good explanation of it with Richard Werner.
Right.
About CBDC, or you can explain.
So CBDC allows the system essentially to take taxes from your bank account. So if you have complete financial transaction control, if you don't do what I say and you don't follow, you know, if I want you to take a vaccine and you don't, then I can turn off your money. But the power of that is now that you've financed all this stealing and you wake up and discover the money's gone and you say, well, wait a minute, you know, I want the money back. At that minute, they've got control. You have no standing to do anything and they can keep taking taxes and raise taxes. Because remember, you now have $35 trillion of treasury outstanding for which we're liable and the assets are stolen. So now you're going to come back around and make us pay. And what do you have to do? You have to take our assets to do that, right?
But in so doing, you also have totally cut out the legislature. So if you said, I'm going to call my congressperson, they can't help you with that.
They can't help you. Right. You've created a financial transaction grid that can implement all fiscal policies through the monetary policy.
Yeah, so, you're converting the fiscal policy to the monetary people.
Right, and complete control.
Yeah.
That's what a social credit system is. We don't need a legislature and we don't need a government. We can just take your taxes and make you do whatever we say and we'll implement those policies. And if you don't do it, we'll turn off your money. And, you know, the challenge in working with legislators is they cannot fathom that it's really this bad.
I thought you mentioned one of your solutions to use cash that I thought is really elegant and perfect. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The one where any purchase below 500, no yes. sales tax. I yes. love that one.
Yeah.
I love that one. It went nowhere because they slapped a big fiscal note on it, but I've been hawking it to other states in the hope if we can get one state to pick it up,
yeah,
I think it'll go
but
like hotcakes.
That is easily understood by anybody who walks in or out of Wawa, anybody who's riding a public bus, anybody who lives in a mansion, everybody can understand what that means.
Everybody can understand it, but I'll tell you, it's huge relief to the, you know, if you look at how much people are struggling with inflation, it's great for the lower income groups. I mean, it really gives them a boost. Mm-hmm. So, And in Tennessee, they lowered the sales tax on farm purchases, I think, down to 4%. So, but I love that one. I just think it's every state should do it. Every state should do it. Okay, so let me get back to the notes here. So, so here's the question, Tim. On a, you know, so last year made it clear that the 80-20 or the 60-40 portfolio is not what it used to be. What, you know, what do you think? A lot of people are saying the stock market is now at an all-time high. Should I switch and do some fixed income? We've talked about what kind of fixed income that would be. But do you think it's time to get careful and move more to fixed income?
I would say if you're going to do it, if you're going to move to fixed income, keep maturity, either do one of two things. The goal, my goal for people is let's not lose money in bonds. And two ways to do that. One is to hold things to maturity. So if you buy a brokered CD and it's you're going to hold it for a year, as long as you hold it to maturity and the people that issued it don't go bankrupt, you're going to get your money back. You won't lose.
Right.
Or just keep maturity short if you know, if you're going to hold it and be subject to the interest rate risk. But I guess the question is really like, is it to get out of the stock market? Is can the stock market keep going up or not? Like, when should I get out? And you have the two, you know, you mentioned the Jeffrey Gundlach, who's very respected and like saying, you know, this is, he said something like, this is not the time to enter a risk position in the equity market.
Right.
But many people aren't entering a position. They've had it for a while.
They're in it. Well, here's the thing. You have two choices. You can hedge or you can shift. Mm-hmm. That's your choice.
And the hedging, so to hedge for people that are not financial people.
Right.
If you're going to use, typically when you're talking about a hedge, you're using a put option or other types of hedges, but they require more financial knowledge. It doesn't mean you can't build the knowledge. But it's not something people can just say, how do I do that? Go to Vanguard, hit the button and do it. You need to have more knowledge than that. But I guess the question I have is also, like I read the, you know, the Rambus analysis, and I try to always go back to technical analysis because the goal of those, of him and all technical analysis is to just follow the numbers and not get caught up in the emotion of it.
Right.
And he's in his thing, I thought I read, he said, even if we go into a melt up, as he talks about, as the final blow off before a potential contraction.
Yeah. Even if this is a melt up, it's not over.
It's not over. So is when Jeffrey Gundlach says that, does he think we're in 1998? Does he think we're in 1999? Does he think we're in 2000? Rambus, I think, thinks we're closer to 1998. And so,
right. And remember, he got, the reason is his handle is Rambus, is he got out of Rambus stock, you know, right before the high.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but yeah, he called it perfectly.
And he bought a house with it, right? Or built a house.
No, what happened was he and his wife sat and they burned their existing house down and they built a new house on it. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful location in the Ozarks. So they built a beautiful new house and they, and two brand new cars, no debt. So new house and two cars with no debt. And he credits his wife with insisting he cash out. She said, we can get a house. We can get two cars. Let's cash out.
Yes.
Okay. So I've got screen share up again because we would turn to commodities. Because one of the things is if you do shift, you know, the option is not just to get some yield in some good short-term fixed income. The option is to go to gold and silver. And one of the things that Rambus makes very, very clear is that we, you know, the bull breakout in gold and silver is very real and compelling.
Yes. Right. It's huge.
Yeah.
And then he writes also that a lot of the commodities, it's not as clear with some of the commodities, but a lot of times the commodities will follow gold and silver, and gold and silver are clearly breaking out.
Right.
To the upside. So he has, you can read him directly and not have me paraphrase him, but he has a really good analysis of that, I think.
So we're off a little bit today. So we're up at 2,363. And now we've dropped down back a little bit. This is Kit.
I think he shows graphs that are things like, you know, to put it simply, gold and silver have been going sideways for 4.5 years and they're breaking out. But when you look at the potential upside on the over on the longer term charts, it can it could be significant if it's a big if, but if things, you know, end up playing out.
Well, here's the thing. Rambis is very conservative. So if you look at what he's describing this quarter, he's really describing a breakout. Mm-hmm. So that means gold and silver are good core positions, and that means they're good investment positions. And the miners are on a tear because the miners have been in a real doghouse compared to bullion. Mm-hmm. But the miner potential, if he's right about the breakout, the miner potential is enormous. So but a couple I things think, are happening. Go ahead.
I just think with his analysis there, your core versus your investment, if you're going to do the investment position, you want to target holding that for a longer period of time, not just, you know, a couple of months.
Right. So I want to just bring up a couple of fundamental issues, because I do still feel a little bit uncomfortable about gold and silver because I don't understand what is really driving this. And I'll tell you why. There are a couple things going on. I have watched for a year while you have heavy gold interest lobbying all the states to get them to do gold bullion depositories, but to put in transactional credit card systems using gold as essentially a way to get, you know, currency liquidity, mm-hmm. which is insane because the central bankers have plenty of gold. The citizens have no gold, and you're putting everybody in a short squeeze. That's exactly, if you look at the plunder economy, disaster capitalism, that's exactly what they did in Russia. That's exactly what they did in Eastern Europe. It's exactly what they did in Latin America. You cut off everybody's currency liquidity, and then you put them in a short squeeze because they need gold or, you know, or other things to transact that the bad guys control.
Yeah.
So, but the states are clearly moving because they, under the Constitution, they can do gold and silver. You know, they're preparing to buy gold. They're working on doing bullion depositories. So we see Utah just passed a bill. Tennessee's working on a bill that hopefully will pass this year. You know, so the treasurer will go out and buy gold. So the states are building their infrastructure to do gold. Mm-hmm. And that's going to move the price up. Another thing that's going to move the price up is concern about war. I mean, it's hard to fathom that anybody would believe we could win a land war in, you know, or NATO could win a land war in Europe. But you have serious people trying to start a war in Europe. And I think it's causing real nervousness. But also there's a shift to the east. So we've been rebalancing the gold stocks to the east. You see articles now, RT just came out with an article saying that the Russians or the Americans had lost control of the gold price market, because we've watched suppression in the gold market, the suppression of the gold price for years. And I can't tell whether it's true that the, you know, the pricing control is moving eastward, or if Mr. Global is just reducing this price suppression and looking forward to trying to short squeeze people through the states.
It's a good question. I don't think you can know, right? So if it's like China taking over the gold price, are they overwhelming the suppression, or is Mr. Global lifting the suppression to try to entice people into the market?
Right. It's impossible to say.
Yeah.
But I, you know, those are the things I'm going to be watching carefully in the next quarter. So anyway, okay. So let's talk about anything else on the markets, the market overview you want to share?
No, I think a lot of it, people always want to take action, and sometimes no action. You know, if you're already positioned, try to not, not do something that gets yourself into trouble.
Right. Right.
Which many people have not, they're not all of a sudden taking a position. They have something they've been in for a while and this kind of thing. And so I'd say just, I would not get out of the stock market wholesale and say, I'm going to, I mean, you could, I guess, but then you'd have to maybe go to gold or if you go to bonds, set the goal to not lose money. That's basically the overall.
Okay. So what I would say is for stocks, do quality. For bonds, do quality. For cash, do quality. For banks, CDs, do quality. Just stay, you know, no junk, stay in quality. Yeah. And, you know, the perfect example, if you really deep dive and look at what's been happening at Boeing, it reminds me, so for the, you know, so I do an investment screen. At the end of the pandemic, we rewrote over 600 stocks just for what happened during the pandemic. We had to throw 80 mm-hmm. off. Mm-hmm. And one of the most common fact patterns was basically they went from good governance and management to a bunch of MBAs who cared about diversity, equity, and inclusion and mm-hmm. and ESG and didn't care about the fundamental business. You know, mm-hmm. all the engineers left. The MBA showed up, and suddenly they're talking ESG and DEI, and nobody cares about the real business. And the next thing you know, the planes are falling out of the sky.
Yeah. To me, that's also the private equity mindset. It's like the 2 to 3 year maximize profits and get out. And then all the decisions, you add DEI, you add short-term thinking, you add motivation for profits, so-called profits, motivation to just milk and, right. and asset strip to the bone and then get out. And it just is, it can be very ugly.
So last year we did a special Solaria report with Lucy Commissar. She had two big pieces on the insurance industry where private equity would buy in and they would make their money by significantly lowering the credit quality of the assets under management. And so your insurance policy went from being a good credit to a lousy credit. Because they're basically, you know, putting crap in and taking profits out the back door by putting crap in.
Yeah.
It was frightening. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's why you want to make sure you know what your insurance company is.
Quality, I think, good overarching advice, I think. If you focus on quality, that can be a good guide.
Okay, so let me talk about the risk issues, because I liken this to a war environment. And from what I'm seeing as I go around both Europe and America, people's financial security is being so impacted by non-financial items that turn into financial items. Of course, the big one is the great poisoning. And I'll just be blunt. I've driven over 50 hours in the last 2.5 weeks. Every time you go into a big grocery store, everybody's being poisoned. Mm-hmm. And I went into a huge grocery store that 5 years ago I could find real food in, and they have an organic section. I could barely find any real food.
Yeah.
It was just astonishing.
But the people walking around don't look well also.
No, they look terrible.
Yeah.
They literally can't lift their feet. They're shuffling like zombies.
Yeah.
It's frightening. Yeah. Okay. So I think if you have to figure out how to protect yourself from the great poisoning. That is a financial issue,
mm-hmm.
and get serious about it. So anyway, I just bought a new detox foot bath.
Okay. So,
I want one in every location.
Yeah.
Okay. So financial control is a real danger. I just have to show you. I have to brag on our new cartoon.
Okay.
So I sent a message to Jeremy Nell and I said, will you please focus on, financial freedom. So this is what he came up with. It's Augustine Karstens. It's great.
He's almost like a caricature of himself, just given his physical appearance and everything and his job and the way he like it just all lines up.
Okay, so two things you also see when you're out and about is so I would say second risk is they're pushing for financial control, and we all have to do everything we can to stop that. And of course, using cash is one thing, but there are many other things to do. And, you know, I have to tell you, I'm out here taking action with all sorts of people, and it's a lot of fun.
It is.
I'll run into somebody who's not doing anything. They're staying on the couch and they're all depressed. And I'm like, why are you depressed? We're having a great time. Come on out here, you know, join the sane and push back against the insane. Because it's a lot more fun than standing around and watching the insane eat into everybody and everything.
Absolutely. You know,
yeah. There was a great UK column just ran a video of Frank Nicely in the state Senate talking about, putting vaccines in lettuce. He's got a bill to outlaw this. Joey Hensley and he So they're fighting for a bill, and another senator stands up and says, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Nobody would ever put vaccines in lettuce. That's absurd.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's documented. Of course they will, you know. And
yeah.
So Frank stood up and said, no, it's really true. Here we go.
Yeah.
Recession and inflation. Everywhere I go, people are being eaten alive by inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about how you beat inflation.
Well, you want to have fixed costs. So if you have, you can talk about paying off debt. If you can't, if your mortgage has a variable rate, if you have a fixed rate and you have other, then focus on other priorities first, but
right.
buy food direct, get to know farmers, get to know your Weston A. Price chapter and buy food in bulk and keep it. And then when you see, like right now we have this stupid avian flu threat and, you know, all this stuff, like figure out a source where you can get chicken, get eggs, know your farmer and don't worry.
Right.
And the farmer's not worried about it. You're not worried about it. You go and buy the eggs from the farmer and you're not subject to these crazy price increases.
Right. Another one is covert war and overt war. And I'm concerned about drafts. There's more talk in various countries in Europe and here about drafts. And,
I wonder, I was not alive. I was born in 1973. So I was not witness to Vietnam and coming home from Vietnam. But with the degree they have difficulty in recruiting, if they put out a draft, I would like to see how much resistance there is to that in terms of public demonstration. I would publicly demonstrate on behalf of my children, my son.
So I think one of the reasons you have all these military men coming across the border and the Senate trying to pass legislation, giving them a pathway to citizenship,
mm-hmm.
you know, in bulk is, mm-hmm. you know, that's their recruiting plan to avoid the draft. Lots of foreign soldiers.
Yeah. And then like you said, maybe you've, I don't know, you said a bunch of different things, but are they there to point the guns out or to point them back in at you?
Well, that's the question. That's
yeah.
the question. I keep being in touch with people in the healthcare industry who are, you know, Gavi, Gates, all of these folks are working on the next pandemic
mm-hmm.
and their money is pouring into mm-hmm. biodefense and they're doing planning for both, the next pandemic. And then you got money pouring in to do planning for the next cyber security and shutdown of the internet. And it's almost as though every cartel is working on an emergency to justify another taking. And
yeah.
whether it's war or pandemic or cybersecurity and the push for the WHO treaty, there, you know, I hate to say it, but as long as you can print massive amounts of money and pour money into uneconomic takings, these guys seem intent on doing more, and they're teeing up a whole series of more opportunities to take.
Yeah, I wonder about, will people go along? Maybe they won't do a healthcare one this time. They'll do cybersecurity, and people go along. I think more and more people are waking up. How many? I don't know, but this model of emergencies to push people to do things, I think, isn't what it used to be. But we'll find out, I guess, when we have one.
Well, that's the question. How well can the marketing work this time? I don't know. Everywhere I go, I have been very enthusiastic for the last 2 months because everywhere I go, I'm seeing state legislators wake up. A bill just passed, and apparently the governor's going to sign it in Tennessee to stop geoengineering. Now, they know they don't have the teeth to do the enforcement. Okay,
yeah.
They don't have the enforcement. But here's what happened. When it was put in, a lot of people just treated it as a joke. And they got a guy from California who came in to testify in opposition to it because it would shut down his cloud seeding opportunities in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And he testified, and apparently several legislators said afterwards, oh, my God, I thought this was all a conspiracy theory. This is real. You know, so it had the opposite effect. What happened was, the conversation in the legislature notified people that this is really happening and it's real. It's like,
yeah.
What? I had no idea. It's like the senator stood up and said, the notion that anybody would put vaccines in lettuce is ridiculous, even though
yeah.
it's documented research going on right now.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so, the wild card is the unintended consequences that sometimes they can't foresee.
If I'm going to say this to every subscriber, if you want to send a copy of Pharma Food to your state legislature with a letter saying this is really happening, and you send us the letter and the money to mail it, we will send one for free to your state legislator. Okay. Because they need to know this is, it's like that line from Rosemary's Baby, you remember? Oh my God, this is really happening. Okay, so let's talk about opportunities. And I just want to take everybody back because I think no matter how lawless the, you know, what you're dealing with is, you know, it's very important to have the mindset that you can build wealth. So we have our Building Wealth curriculum. And I bring it up because I've gone back in history, and no matter how bad things are, war, pestilence, plague, somebody's building wealth. It's amazing. And
I also like the saying, health is wealth. And
absolutely.
There's so many aspects within those pillars that you can take action on. Just go on there and look at the list and pick something. There's a million things to do.
Right. And do the things you're led to do and that really work for you, that give you energy. I mean, so this should be fun. Mm-hmm. But I always, you know, whenever I have a day where the news coming in is, you know, is dire and dreadful, the first thing I do is, you know, I'll make a list. What can I do to build wealth today?
Mm-hmm.
And I do it. And I'm convinced that there are two things we have to do. We have to stop tyranny, and then we have to switch to a building wealth reset, because there does need to be a reset, okay?
Yeah.
We do need a reset. If you look at what's going on with the federal credit, we do need a reset. The American Empire.
I agree.
The American Empire is failing. And one of the things I can assure you is as it's failing, there's not enough wealth, so you might as well build more.
Yeah.
And I feel, as you know, I feel very strongly about that. And one of the things we did, you know, we had, Ricardo did a learning plan and we talked about it last quarter. But you want to kick up your learning speed. And one of the reasons is, to me, the great opportunity is disintermediation and decentralizing things. Because if you look at your financial statements and balance sheet, kicking out the bad guys at, you know, getting them out of your wallet and getting them out of your assets is an opportunity. You know, but the question is, how do you do it? Do you build your own well? Do you provide your own energy? Do you grow your own food? Where is it? And there are thousands of things, and it depends on everybody's individual circumstance. But
for many people, that those actions that fit them can be tremendously energizing at the same time you're cutting out the middlemen.
Right. The more middlemen you cut out in this environment, I think, in many cases. So we mentioned pay down debt. You know, I always have to say, get a good bank. A couple of questions in the securities market, though. We talked about, do you do hedged equity or fixed income, and how do you find the credits? We went through that. Mm-hmm. What about indexed or screened? You know, and
yeah, indexed or screened. So, you know, the downside of index is you have all the things you don't want in there, the Pfizer and the J&J and whatever. There are ways to screen out, and then generally, I think about it either top down or bottom up. Bottom up is a screen like you do, where you basically say, I'm going to assume everyone's guilty. I'm going to find the ones that I'm going to prove innocent through my own research.
Right. Right.
And then the other way to do that for some people is that you can have a thing called a separately managed account if you have enough money. And then you can take the broad index and X out the biggest offenders.
Right. Right.
So there's two approaches to that, depending on who you are and what kind of solutions are available to you.
Right. And I don't know, you know, I do value stocks. So value stocks were, you know, everything was glorious until the control grid took off. But here's the thing. If you look at the control grid stocks, I would no more put money in the man in the moon, because I was always taught never finance, you know, real men don't finance their enemies.
Yeah. But even in 2000, the tech bubble burst, value underperformed right then also. And growth totally outperformed and blew off the top. And then we had the correction and went back. But so there have been other times in history where value underperformed.
Right. Absolutely. The other thing I want to say is, to me, one of the great opportunities is to take action. And because what I find wherever I go, and part of it is we've been doing the meet and greets. So if you go to the website, can you see that on the screen share?
Yes.
Okay. So we've been doing meet and greet, and you can go there, and we're now in the process of booking all the meet and greets for September, October, November, because I'll go back to Europe and then come back in the fall. Mm-hmm. So I'm headed to Sandpoint, Idaho this week, and then I'll go to Florida, I'll be in Fort Myers, and then Sioux Falls, then Kansas City, and then the Rogue Food Conference.
No, I will be at the Rogue Food Conference, so I look forward
to it. Oh, really? Oh, great. That's going to be fabulous. And they still have tickets, so if you want to come. We just had Joel Salatin and John Moody on the Financial Rebellion, and that was great. Anyway, and you can sign up at our Financial Transaction Freedom 2024. You can sign up for updates, and we keep you posted on what we're doing in Tennessee. But in the theme this quarter, of course, what you'll get when we finally go through all of it is the, let me get back to the wrap-ups. You know, our theme, you're going to get the whole presentation on sort of what the states are doing. And I will say this, and this is the most optimistic information, or not, I would say the most optimistic part of what's going on in the world, because you are watching an explosion of people saying, wait a minute, you know, I'm sane, and what you guys are doing is insane. And you know something? I just don't want to be a part of insane, and I'm not putting up with this anymore, and I have the power to do something about it.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, everybody's busy taking action, and they're having a great time. We had Richard Warner come to Nashville last week and then to Knoxville. I was over with Richard having brunch at Senator Nicely's farm. It was a great group of people. Steve Smith came down, you know, the guy who runs Parvin came down. Carolyn Betts came down from Ohio.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Murphy, who represents us as the legislator. You know, it was just a great group of people. Needless to say, they have an organic operation. And so his daughter catered it. The food was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so being in the swim of people who are fighting for food freedom and fighting for financial freedom, it's just so great, because there are so many sane people showing up who 2 or 5 years ago would never have gotten involved.
Yeah.
You know, they would have just said, oh, global spring is a conspiracy theory. Now they're like, okay, how do we stop this?
Yeah. And that Rogue Food Conference is growing. That's an example of people, you know, breaking out of the mold.
Right. Anyway, so the bad news is the central bankers intend to get complete control. The good news is you can do something about it, and you can stop them. And if you don't, they will get control. I mean, they are going for broke. And I think the U.S. states is the best chance to stop it. I don't think you need a huge amount of people, but I also think, you know, if you want to get through this period feeling sane, you got to gather up with the sane people who are taking action, because they're the ones who are having the best time ever.
And didn't you mention the 3.5% and the peaceful is all that's necessary with 3.5%?
Did you watch that TED Talk?
Yeah, I did not. I don't even know what it is.
Oh, I'll send it to you. Okay. So it's a scholar who I think they knew a lot about violent revolution. And so somebody inspired them to go study all the civil disobedience revolutions. Mm-hmm. And they looked at, I think, 200 revolutions that were led by civil disobedience. And they came back and said, civil disobedience is far more effective because you can involve far more people and it can be far more inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So only certain people have the physical wherewithal and the attitude and the sort of fearlessness to engage in violent revolution. The problem is that self-selects out of the people who get involved. You know, there are a lot of people who can do civil disobedience who can't do the physical.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was number one. You're much more inclusive, and that gives you far better intelligence and far greater depth in the society. But the other thing is you only need 3.5%. 3.5% can engineer a successful civil, you know, civil disobedience revolution. So, you know, and we're getting there. I don't know if you just saw it. Two parents were just prosecuted and indicted and have been sentenced to almost 10 years in prison each for providing their son with a gun who later became a school shooter.
Okay. Well, good. There's accountability.
There's accountability, but the moral of the story is don't give your kid a smartphone.
Train him how to use it and supervise.
Right.
Yeah. And don't give it to him if he's on psychotropic medication.
Exactly. Okay. So the second quarter is underway. Tell us what you're going to be focused on in the second quarter, Tim.
I think we're going to be getting more into the silly season for the election and to not get sidetracked with all that. And I think I tend to follow Rambis and think that the stock market will continue to move forward and to not take drastic actions and make it through, you know, one day at a time, one month at a time, and just keep turtling forward, as you would say.
Would if you were heavy in cash, would you shift any money into precious metals now, or would you see if it cools off a little?
I would say how much cash and maybe step into it a little bit, because right now it's breaking out straight up. And sometimes you can miss the whole move if it goes straight up.
Right.
So maybe, but this, the way to manage that kind of thing, if you have cash on the side and you have enough of it, you always want to have enough emergency cash, but if you have extra cash, I would say step into it, take a position for something, some section, a quarter of it or something. And then all of a sudden now you're paying attention a lot more closely now that you have a position, and then look, pick your spots and maybe on a pullback add some and kind of thing, things like that.
Right. Okay. And it is spring and I do think, you know, spring is the time when the saying get more fearless.
Yes. Get out, right. Get in the sunshine, get out and get active. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, Tim, we look forward to seeing you in the second quarter equity overview in 3 months. And I hope you'll keep us posted on anything you see going on that tells us something, you know, is some significant move is underway. Okay.
Will do. The intelligent network is critical. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for today. I hope you will access the web presentation at Solari for the first quarter wrap-up. Charts, Rambis, Chartology. Rambis is always great, and he has a lot to say this time about gold and commodities, so I hope you'll access that. And that's it. We'll see you again we'll be doing the theme for the for the wrap up in May. Just to give you a heads up, we're working on doing another backcasting, but this one on financial freedom, Tim.
Okay. Very cool.
Okay. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, happy hunting, good night, and good luck.